Hi, this is James Barris. I hope you find this talk supports you in your practice. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button underneath my picture on Dharma Seed to do that. Your support is greatly appreciated. So good to be here with all of you. And this evening, one of the topics I wanted to look at was a teaching on the Buddha, of the Buddhas, and from the Buddhist tradition on what makes a good ruler, what makes a good leader. Hopefully it'll be relevant to us here today, and we can also open up a general conversation about practice and how things are going for you and how you can hold whatever your experience is. So to start off, want to invite Eve Decker, co-guiding teacher of our community, to offer some words and a song. So, Eve.
Please. Thank you, James. It's nice to be here and see you all. You know what I know about what James is going to share. I don't know any more than that either, the title, the topic. Although I think I may have had read to me, not read myself, a sutta on something like how to be a king or something like that. So maybe we'll get some of that, which is all very wonderful and rich. But I was thinking about that question of what do I think makes a good leader? And I think it's the same thing makes a good leader that makes a good person, and that's intention, which is this, you know, we come to an understanding about what really matters and then set an intention to guide our speech and actions in ways that can be skillful. And a really like reliable intention, as far as I'm concerned, is the wish for peace. Wish for peace in our own systems, in our own hearts and minds and bodies, and the wish for peace in our relationships, and in our loved ones, and then for beings in the world. So the song that I chose, sometimes I bring these, you know, I write and bring here some more complex singer-songwriter type songs. But the one that I chose for tonight is just a few words that we can repeat a few times. And they actually are attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. It's the prayer of St. Francis, which is simply, may I be an instrument of peace, which I think is a beautiful intention for a leader. So it's just may I be an instrument of peace, two melodic lines, and then we repeat. And both of them start the same, may I be an instrument of, and then in the first line we say, peace. And then the second line, it's may I be an instrument of peace. And I'll just sing that a few times, and I encourage you to sing along with me from behind your muted microphone, because we can't sing together on Zoom because of it landing at different times. And if you like such things, it's quite easy to do it in a round with me. So while I say, may I be an, after I say an, if you come in with may I, it makes a very cool round. So just, if you wish, it's fun to do. But mostly just tuning into this beautiful intention, a good one to just have in our own lives, as well as wish our rulers and leaders all around the world to tune into. May I be an instrument of peace. 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 May I be an instrument of peace.
Thank you so much, Eve. That was soothing. I didn't see, there were some people singing, but a lot weren't, and I highly recommend singing these days. It's one of my main therapies, just putting on something that you know well and just let it move through you. That was beautiful. So here we are, getting together and probably not a not too much of a surprise why I would pick that topic of what makes a good leader, what makes a good ruler these days. We can be inspired, we can be incited. We are, as humans, we can be so influenced by, we're influenced by everything around us. And when we're around people who are instruments of peace, just even hearing a song, that affects our being. When we're around people who are angry or anxious, that affects us as well. Not that those are bad or wrong. They're all part of being human. But we affect each other in very profound ways. And some people in positions of power and leadership, if you're in a position of leadership or power, you know, you have a big influence on others. Even as a, I'm remembering now, I was a school teacher for many years in New York City, mostly fifth grade and sixth grade, and you probably can remember the teachers in your life, some of them that had such wonderful impacts and effects on you, and others that, you know, weren't your favorite teacher, or that you had some kind of traumatic experience with, you know. Well, we're all little kids in big school, and we are affected by those who have power to affect us. We all need heroes to look up to. When I was young, Gandhi was a big hero of mine. I had three heroes: Mahatma Gandhi, Lou Gehrig, who was the first baseman for the New York Yankees well before I was born. He died 1941, but there was, his story always inspired me. I read the Lou Gehrig story when I was a kid. I was a huge baseball fan, and just his goodness and his dependability. He was called the Iron Man, and there was something so good about him. And Fiorello LaGuardia was another hero of mine. I saw the play Fiorello when I was a kid on Broadway, and he was just the mayor of New York. They named LaGuardia Airport after him, and he was a really good human being. And when I was growing up, my heroes, besides those three, were, you know, usually sports figures. And I'd ask my father the same question that my son Adam, who's now 35, would ask me when I'd be talking about athletes. You know, is he a good guy? Yeah. And I assumed that he was a good guy, whoever it was. Mickey Mantle, although he later shared that he didn't have the best use of his life, but to me, he was a good guy. Okay, Willie Mays was a good guy. And we need to know about somebody, if people are good guys or good gals, good inspiring figures. Because we have this phenomenon that Jonathan Haidt coined, the elevation response. When we see nobility, it brings that out in us as well. So here we are, there's a few leaders that are on the stage these days, and without getting too much into the politics of things, it's so striking to see in this invasion of Ukraine the difference between someone who's so courageous and brave, who didn't ask to be in the position that he's in, that is rallying his whole country. You know, it's amazing how the effect of somebody's leadership and courage can inspire and rally. And that's why, you know, many people feel, oh, he's a marked man, because it would make such a difference if he weren't in the picture. But there he was. I was hearing somebody who was just in an interview with him recently, and this guy said he just is so real and so good, and somehow has risen to the occasion in a way that nobody could have ever predicted. And it's important that he's there. And then another leader who is isolated. I heard that I was listening to somebody who knows, oh, and I'm reading an article of somebody who knows the inner workings from Russia of how things work. He'd written a book on Putin and knows all the characters very well. And he said that he's, there's like two or three people that he trusts. Fiona Hill said four. This article today said there's one guy who he's with, and that you have to quarantine for 1 or 2 weeks before getting in to see him, because he's so isolated and he has all this power, and he's like a caged animal with a lot of power and a lot of anger. So I thought it would be interesting to hear some words of the Buddhas on what makes a good ruler and the duties of a good ruler, and then look at one ruler from the Buddhist tradition, an actual figure that had a profound effect on his culture and his times, King Ashoka. So here are the 10 duties of a ruler, according to the Buddha. 1, dana, that a good ruler naturally is a generous human being, having a willingness to sacrifice their own interests for the good of the people. 2, sila, morality, to maintain a high moral order in one's personal conduct. 3, parichaga, altruism, that's even beyond. Dana is seen as charity, and altruism, being generous towards people and avoiding selfishness. Okay. Ajava, honesty, fulfilling one's duties with loyalty and integrity. Madhava, gentleness, being kind and gentle and never arrogant. That would be kind of refreshing, wouldn't it, if our leaders embodied that. With each of these, I mean, you might think of the people who inspire you and how much they embody or don't embody these, but there's something about a gentleness and a kindness and a lack of arrogance and humility, really. Tapa, number 6, self-control, to perform one's duties with dispassion. Leading a simple life, not indulging in a life of luxury, having self-control. 7, akoda, non-anger, to remain calm in the midst of confusion, not bearing a grudge against others. 8, avihimsa, it's like ahimsa, non-violence, not persecuting others, not only not harming, but promoting peace by avoiding and preventing war and everything which involves violence and the destruction of life. The 9th quality, kanti, forbearance or patience. Be able to endure hardships, difficulties, and insults without losing one's temper. That would be refreshing. And 10, avirodhana, uprightness, respecting public opinion, promoting harmony, not opposing the will of the people or obstructing any measures that are conducive to the welfare of the people, to rule in harmony with one's people. So all of that, as Eve was singing in her song, it's really just being a decent human being, you know. But when it's there in a leader, wow, the power of that, when somebody is just a decent human being who has power, It's immense. It's enormous. And I want to share the story of Ashoka. How many people are familiar with Ashoka? Just raise your hand. Just a few. Yeah. So Ashoka actually lived he reigned an Indian emperor who ruled almost all of India from 268 to 232 BC. So that's about 36 years. And he was first known as one of his names, one of his monikers was Ashoka the Wicked. That was an earlier name of his, because he was this this take no prisoners conqueror who, let's see, I'll read a little from Wikipedia, expanded the empire to reign over territory stretching from present day Afghanistan in the west to present day Bangladesh in the east, covering the entire Indian subcontinent except for parts of present-day Tamil Nadu, provincial capitals in Patna, Taxila, Ujjain. And it was a court, it was, he waged war and conquered and was directly responsible for more than 100,000 deaths and 150,000 deportations. So just imagine being responsible for that. And imagine the kind of mindset that would have to one would have to go and plunder and destroy and kill. And you'd think there couldn't be much hope for somebody like that. Now, I'm not going to presume that there'll be magical transformations with leaders today, but one, this is a story of realizing that you never know that people can have a transformation. And it happened with Ashoka. It happened after a particularly destructive war against the Kalinga in about 260 BCE. So that was 8 years into his reign. And as the story goes, after this horrific war, bloodshed, bodies all over the battlefields, as the story has come down, he sees all of this bloodshed, all of this destruction, and he's feeling really empty inside. And as the story goes, across the battlefield, after it's all over, after the dust settles, there is this Buddhist monk who very serenely and peacefully, who knows what was going on in that monk's heart, probably filled with compassion and trying to maintain equanimity, but he serenely walks across the battlefield with a bowl in his hand, an alms bowl in his hand. And Ashoka has this epiphany. He says, here I am, the most powerful person in the world, and I'm not happy. And I'm miserable. And here is this simple monk walking serenely across, who has nothing other than his robes and his bowl. And in that moment, he has this deep realization that he has been traveling the wrong path. And he asks the monk for some teachings. Help me find some peace in my heart. I'm not finding it this way. And the monk gives him some initial teachings, teaches him to meditate, teaches him to be mindful, teaches him a bit about the profound power of peace in one's heart. And Ashoka has a religious conversion. And he spends the rest of his reign, 260, that's about 32 years as a man of peace, trying to make amends for his past deeds. And Ashoka is well known. He's very well known in India. Besides just having his own conversion, he dedicated his reign to be a reign of peace. And he put these pillars throughout the land that inscribed what are called the Edicts of Ashoka. And there are places you can still see these pillars. The new rules of the land. I'm just imagining that. Imagine if all of a sudden you hear about a ruler who was ruthless and destructive, all of a sudden having an epiphany, being born again, or whatever you want to call it, and saying, we're going to have peace in this land from now on. Wow, hard to even wrap the mind around it, you know. But I want to share with you some of the edicts of Ashoka, some of the rules that he instituted. Morality being the cornerstone of it. Leading a life of morality as one of those duties is right behavior. And I'll share with you some of the edicts, some of the words that are on the edict pillars. Dharma is good. And what is Dharma? It is having few faults and many good deeds, mercy, charity, truthfulness, and purity. This is on the major pillar edict number 2. The glory of Dhamma or Dharma will increase throughout the world, and it will be endorsed in the form of mercy, charity, truthfulness, purity, gentleness, and virtue. He decided to use his power to make life better for his people, and he also tried to change the way people thought and lived. And he thought that the Dharma meant doing the right thing. So here are a few others. Kindness to prisoners. He showed great concern for fairness in the exercise of justice, caution, and tolerance in the application of sentences, and regularly pardoned prisoners with a uniformity in judicial procedure and punishment. Everybody was treated fairly. This is from another edict. This is my instruction from now on. Men, people, probably mostly men, who are imprisoned or sentenced to death are to be given 3 days respite. Thus, their relations may plead for their lives, or if there is no one to plead for them, they may make donations or undertake a fast for a better rebirth in the next life. for is my wish they should gain the next world. Respect, and he pardoned a number of prisoners. Respect for animal life. Perhaps the first ruler in history to advocate conservation measures for wildlife. And one edict, here no living being must be killed and sacrificed. And also no festival meeting must be held. And by festival meeting, in the festivals, they would sacrifice many animals as part of the ritual of the festivals. There are some festival meetings considered meritorious by the king. And formerly, it says, many hundreds of thousands of animals were killed daily for the sake of curry. But now, when this rescript on moral purity is caused to be written, then only three animals are to be killed daily. But even this, not regularly. And there's a whole list of animals that he says, no, don't kill these. It's about, 30 or 40 animals. Don't kill this, and this. Religious precepts. So he says, this is when the edicts were written, I have been a Buddhist layman for more than 2.5 years, but for a year, I did not make much progress. Now, for more than 1 year, I have drawn closer to the order, to the Sangha, and have become more ardent. That's pretty good practitioner. But he believed in all religions having being respected. All religions share a common positive, well, this is just the commentary, positive essence, and he encouraged tolerance and understanding of other religions. Here's another edict. The king wishes that all sects may dwell in all places, for all seek self-control and purity of mind. Whosoever praises his own sect and blames other sects out of pure devotion to one's own sect, if they are acting thus, they rather injure their own sect very severely. Concord is meritorious. They should both hear and obey each other's morals. This is the desire of the king, that all sects should be both full of learning and pure in doctrine. He dispensed medicines both near and to other countries far. And he ordered wherever there were no herbs beneficial to people and beneficial to cattle, everywhere they were caused to be imported and to be planted. Likewise, wherever there were no fruits, everywhere they were caused to be imported and to be planted. And on roads, trees were planted and wells were caused to be dug for the use of cattle and humans. And he established many roadside facilities so that there could be resting places, rest areas, as people were traveling. Numerous drinking places were caused to be established here and there for the enjoyment of cattle and humans. So, nice to know that there was a ruler like this, who was so inspired by the Dharma that it turned him around. So to not ever give up on people, but to see that we want to have goodness come out of us, even though we might be maybe not in this lifetime, maybe not happening, but we need to come from goodness in that. And so besides Ashoka and besides leaders, we are all leaders in our own way. We all influence everyone else. And not to wait for others to somehow save the day. So I want to just end, and then we'll have maybe an open conversation with an inspiring prophecy from the Tibetan tradition. Perhaps you've heard of this. This is called the Shambhala prophecy. And Joanna Macy talks about this. This is true. This is a real prophecy. And to see that we are, each one of us, Shambhala warriors. And this is the prophecy. There comes a time when all life on earth is in danger. Great barbarian powers have arisen, although these powers spend their wealth in preparations to annihilate one another, they have much in common, weapons of unfathomable destructive power and technologies that lay waste our world. In this era, when the future of sentient life hangs by the frailest of threads, the kingdom of Shambhala emerges. You cannot go there, the prophecy says, for it is not a place. It is not an entity. It exists in the hearts and minds of the Shambhala warriors. And this is a term that Joanna got a transmission of, and they were called warriors in this prophecy. You cannot recognize a Shambhala warrior when you see them, for they wear no uniforms or insignia, and they carry no banners. They have no barricades on which to climb to threaten the enemy, or behind which they can hide to rest or regroup. They do not even have any home turf. Always they must move on the terrain of the barbarians themselves. Now the time comes when great courage, moral and physical courage, is required of the Shambhala warriors, for they must go into the very heart of the barbarian power, into the pits and pockets and citadels where the weapons are kept, to dismantle them. To dismantle weapons in every sense of the word, they must go into the corridors of power where decisions are made. The Shambhala warriors have the courage to do this because they know that these weapons are manomaya, mind-made. Made by the human mind, they can be unmade by the human mind. These Shambhala warriors know that the dangers threatening life on earth are not visited upon us by any extraterrestrial power, satanic deities, or preordained evil fate. They arise from our own decisions, our own lifestyles, and our own relationships. So in this time, the Shambhala warriors go into training, and they have weapons. What weapons? The weapons are compassion and insight. Both are necessary. We need compassion because it gives the juice, the power, the passion to move. It means not to be afraid of the pain of the world. Then you can open to it and step forward and act. But that weapon by itself is not enough. It can burn one out. So you need the other. You need the insight into the interdependence of all phenomena. And with this wisdom, you know that it is not a battle between good guys and bad guys, because the line between good and evil runs through the landscape of every human heart. With insight into our profound interrelatedness, you know that actions undertaken with pure intent have repercussions throughout the web of life. beyond what you can measure or discern. By itself, that insight may appear too cool, too conceptual to sustain you and to keep you moving. So you need the heat of compassion, but together these two can sustain us as agents of wholesome change. They are gifts for us to claim now in the healing of our world. So just to reflect on the fact that your practice empowers you as a Shambhala warrior in whatever limited influence you have, you affect everybody else. And you are, in your own way, a source of inspiration to others. Now, of course, that means you need to process your pain, your dysregulation, your confusion, your anger, your outrage. That's all part of it, to feel it all, not to be thinking that you're so tough that you don't feel these, but you absorb and metabolize all of those feelings and let your practice hold them all. And then you become an instrument of peace, as we heard in that opening song. So just as we, before we open it up to a conversation, just take a moment and go inside. And reflect on the leaders, those that inspire you. How they embody the qualities that elevate you. Courage, integrity, kindness, centeredness, love. So what touched them about you? What touch you about? Touch them to you. And then if that they touch those qualities in you, it means that you have those seeds in your own mind and heart. Otherwise, they wouldn't resonate for you. And just acknowledging that you have those seeds that have probably sprouted to some extent within you, and allow that Shambhala warriorship to awaken in you so you can be an instrument of peace. And courage. And wisdom. And love. So now we can just open it up. Any reflections, any comments, whether it's about this topic or things that have been coming up for you this past week or so. You can just either raise your hand or unmute yourself. Yeah, Charmaine, did you want to say something?
Yes. I was very depressed when I first turned on the program. The crisis has, the war, it just overtook me.
Yeah.
And today it just, I couldn't deal with it, you know. But I feel much better now. And I just wanted to share that when I was about, God, I don't know, I must have been a teenager, my hero or heroine was Eleanor Roosevelt.
Mm.
And I remember she wrote a book called Live and Learn. Or I lived, you live, no, it was called You Live by Learning. Or no, you look, but anyway, you know what I, but I remember I wanted that book so badly. And one of my, I think, one of my brothers gave it to me for my birthday. I think I asked for it. And it was so exciting to write, to read about her at that age. She mm-hmm. was, you know, I think what I identified with was she was such a shy person mm-hmm. and she was forced into a role and did so well at it, you know. And she was a hero to me, a heroine. Mm-hmm. So
mm-hmm.
it brought that to mind. And
mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I got a little transmission just you sharing that.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad that you're feeling in a different space now than you were before. And I just want to say that I've been in a number of groups this last week, and each time it seems that people come away feeling a bit more uplifted or affected by the fact of being with others in community. We need community these days because we're, it's too much to hold alone, but when we're in community, we have a larger field to hold our, all those feelings inside that need to be honored and acknowledged. So glad you're with us. Yeah.
It's like, it's just too much. It's just too much, you know, after today, just too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when it's too much, we need to know how to regulate, how to back off,
exactly.
how to nourish ourselves. That's, but it's not, you can't just go into the fray all the time.
Yeah.
You need to know when to back off. That's why, you know, I've been telling people, and people who've been doing the Joy Course with me now, this is a time to nourish yourself as well as let in, honor the pain. Do things that you love. Be out in nature. Be with friends. Listen to music. Exercise, move your body and get out of your head. And if you're on a 24/7 news cycle, that's not going to be what you need. And so you need to nourish yourself and titrate your dukkha, as I say, just a little at a time. So I hope you have a good week.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. But I couldn't even practice.
You know? Then don't practice. Then go.
Well, I don't because.
Yeah. All right. Well, you do. Here's the question. Here's the question to ask yourself. What do I need right now?
Yes.
Just ask that.
Yeah. Yeah. What do I need?
Exactly. Well,
Jim, let's give a few other people some a chance.
Okay.
So thanks so much, Charmaine. Yeah. Jim, did you want to say something?
Shio Chimese, good to see you. Yes, there's been, and in other Dharma groups, there's been so much spillage over the Ukraine. And we kind of ended with, well, you know, everybody had all these feelings and one person wanted to shut it down. And no, we need to focus it. And the question is, so now you've got all these feelings, what are you going to do about this in your life, in your heart, in your direction? And I like what we did with this. The first thing was we regulated it and asked, what's a good leader? We know what a bad leader is. What is a good leader? And then we went in with Dana, which was perfect because everything else starts from Dana. It does, you know, it starts with there. And that got me thinking before this, because I had to read about this just to kind of regulate that. Dharma, you know, I think Dana, and we hear this, hear that, and everybody's really come here. Most of us have come from Christian Judaism or, and a few from Islam. And so they think more of caritas. But I, as I really was studying this, it was saying it's relinquishing. And that's so more powerful and deeper. And once you start to relinquish, which would be attachment, then all that, all those other paramitas are right there. Boom, 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 boom. And it's, go with it. So what can I do in terms of Dana with this going on and all these on our personal feelings and upsets and who it brings up? Because, yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you. Yeah, it all, you know, whether Dana, it's all about a generosity of heart or an opening of heart and feeling of connection. So thank you so much. Thanks for sharing that, Jim. Yeah. Larry. Yeah. You got to unmute.
Yeah. I just want to very briefly say the most inspiring thing that I've ever heard from a leader came in a movie, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, where he was rallying his troops, the king, and he said, the day will come when the courage of men will fail. It is not this day. It is not this day. And it's almost like the president of the Ukraine saying, saying that we will, he's rallying and giving courage to his people.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, last one quickly. Let's, Serena, and then maybe Eve can do the dedication. So
I think that I really appreciate everybody else's shares and the pain and suffering and feelings of powerlessness that can arise given the situations. And I think for me, more than anything else, feelings of powerlessness, even in even though you could do small things like, you know, send things or make donations, etc.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the story that you, the last part where you talked about the rising of the, you know, the Shambhala.
Yeah, the warrior.
Warriors was very empowering.
Oh, good.
Because I really can't do much about Putin right now.
Right.
And I cannot do much about, you know, these troops, you know, going in and killing Ukrainians. And so I think the best thing that I could do is use whatever energy I have to help other people that are kind of currently around me.
You got
one of the things. One of the things that I decided to we're not warriors. We have no courage. You know, like I decided, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be done in my life that I have not taken care of, even in terms of my own physical health, etc.
Yeah.
You know, teeth, this, that, and the other thing. Why don't you, Serena, you know, be a warrior in that way and see what you could get done today to take care of your life so that you're better able to be functioning and helping other people.
Beautiful. I think you got it. That's it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Eve, can you take us out with a dedication? Yes.
May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may we find and a joyful blank place there. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave our grief and pain. May this boundless light meet the darkness of our sacred night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and wise. James, you're muted.
May our evening here together and all the goodness that comes from it be shared for the benefit of the people in Ukraine, the people in Russia, all people who are suffering all around the world, all those who bring happiness to the world and for the benefit of the planet. Mm.